Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Gil Alexander of a numbers game will join us. We'll go over a bunch, the Masters, some baseball, some NBA, and a lot to get to recording this now. The east side of the bracket is complete. The west is still TBD, and usually these are done Sunday afternoon. The last couple years it was done Sunday afternoon, pretty much same time as the Masters. My guess is they didn't want to go head-to-head with the Masters, makes sense, but look, I'm not staying up to midnight here to see who wins Kings Blazers so we can figure out the west side of the bracket. We'll deal with it in the next couple days. The East is set, but I'll start with the Masters, and Rory wins again. And just it's amazing the roller coaster ride you have betting golf and even just watching the odds where Rory finishes so strong on Friday. He's like minus 250, minus 275 heading into the third round into Saturday. Pretty quickly, Saturday starts with the bogey. Pretty quickly, he's back to, you know, around even money at coin flip. He birdies, I think it was on 10. He's back to where he was, minus 240. He double bogeys 11. He's plus money. And it's just, it's a roller coaster. It's the merry-go-round, whatever amusement park ride analogy you want to use. Because at one point, it looked like Burns, who started well on Sunday, he got really short. Cam Young was really the guy that was the main threat in terms of the odds. Rose, who has finished second a million times here, is like, all right, he's the short shot. He was under 2-1. Maybe it's his turn. And there's always Scheffler lurking. He had 12 shots to make up. He made up 11 of them, but he falls one short and Rory wins again. So just it's wild from the odds perspective. It's wild the swings you get. It's frustrating betting this because you think your bet's in good shape. You think you have a shot and you go from having no shot to, or you go from having a shot to no shot in the blink of an eye. Like if you took a shot on Burns, you know, you're 3-4-1. Next thing you know, you're 35-1 and you're probably, and you're pretty much shot. And just a lot of that in golf, but congrats to those who had Rory. Not a lot of people I listened to did. And that's the other thing too. When golf is not your main sport, which is not for me, obviously, you know, you listen to the people you trust, and there's 3, 4, 5 different people you trust, and they all like 4 or 5 different golfers, and you just try to pick the needle out of the haystack and the 20 guys. And boy, I would imagine the books did pretty well from everyone I heard. You know, Patrick Reed was a popular one. Rahm was a popular one. Scheffler's always going to have his support. I mean, there's a bunch of different sleepers at longer odds. Robert McIntyre. I mean, I could list 20 or 30 guys. It felt like by the time I did the Wednesday night show with Femi, the primetime show, it felt like by the end of the Wednesday show, 11 o'clock Eastern Wednesday night, it felt like I had heard every single golfer get picked by somebody, but Rory was not one of them. I don't remember anyone picking Rory, but Rory wins it again. And even Rory was like -250 going into Saturday, minus 275, and then plus 425 at some point on Sunday, where you just, it's wild. It's just wild the swings and odds you have, and the emotional roller coaster is crazy as well. So we'll talk a little bit about that with Gil Alexander. I'll save most of the NBA for, we'll do that Wednesday. You got the playing games. The East is set. Hawks and Knicks. Boy, the Magic blew a game to the Celtics where Celtics were resting everybody, and that might have given Mazzulla coach of the year because Mazzulla now FanDuel minus 160. Seems like whoever you give him, he'll win. There's that narrative. I know the Pistons were the one seed, but the Magic now stuck in the play-in against the Sixers, and the Heat and the Hornets is the other play-in in the East. Hornets are a good team, but they're going to have to win now the double play-in. One of them will be at home, but they're going to have to win two of them and one of them on the road just to get in, and the best they can be is the 8 seed. And if they did get the 8 seed, they'd give the Pistons, I would think, a hard time. But Knicks-Hawks, that was a rematch, a hotly contested series, boy, 5 years ago now when the Hawks made that run to the conference finals. You know, Trae Young prominently involved. You get a rematch of that. Knicks, about minus 250 favorites. I would expect that to be a pretty long series. I'll get to my thoughts. I really haven't thought about it, but top of my head, that looks like a longer series. Cavs should make pretty quick work against the Raptors, and I do think the Cavs get a pretty good break here with all the seeding maneuvering, and I think the Cavs can beat the Raptors. Then if they draw the one in Detroit, that's a winnable series too, so not a bad path for Cleveland, who is angling for the 4 seed. So we'll see here how the West plays out, but hopefully we get a good playoff. The regular season has just been, the end has just been a complete disaster in terms of the blowouts, the high scores, but hopefully, and I do think we'll get a good playoff. Hopefully we get a good postseason here. The baseball, before we get to Gil, I think the big takeaway, and I'll get to the Yankees in a minute, the big takeaway for me is just the parity where the Dodgers come into Sunday with 11 wins. They're the best team. Everyone else from that, the Pirates had the second best record coming into Sunday. There's no like bad team, awful team, at least now, not yet. And maybe, I'm sure somebody will emerge. These teams will separate. It's still only a couple weeks. But like the worst record in the American League was the White Sox, where they are 5-9, 5-10. I mean, there's not a lot of separation. They always say the NFL is an 8-8 league. It's made for parity. It's made for teams to go 500. There's a lot of that going on. And so far early in baseball, there's a lot of that going on right now outside of the Dodgers, who are obviously the class of the sport and dominant. There's a lot of, 9-7s, 8-8s. The worst are 5-9, and you get the idea. It's a lot of teams within two or three games of 500. So that's been interesting to note just a few weeks into the season. Again, it is still very early, even though we're a couple weeks and you're starting to get to the point where you could feel like you have some sort of information on these teams. These teams are starting to form some sort of habits or identities. It is still extremely early, but you know what? The easy thing to do is say, well, it's early. We'll talk in June. Well, we're not doing the show in June. We're doing the show now. It's April. I got to have opinions now, even though there is some truth to waiting and just letting it play out. We're doing the shows now. You got to have opinions now. So as of now, Dodgers, clearly the class of the league, and then everybody else, mediocre, which, hey, if you're off to a bad start, like the Yankees, the Mets, who are now off to mediocre starts after the Yankees had a great start, you look around and say, hey, it could be a lot worse. Nobody's running and hiding with it. And you still got obviously a ton of season left. I'll start with the Yankees. I've talked about this for a while with them. For a team that has unlimited resources, all the money in the world, there is no salary cap in baseball. You can get whoever you want. You could do what the Dodgers do and just go out and get every superstar, every all-star. The sky is the limit, to quote Michael Jordan. The sky is the limit. You could get anyone. You could form an all-star team, 9 all-stars, 10 all-stars, all-stars off the bench. They have all the money. There is no payroll. They roll it out a lineup Sunday with Trent Grisham, Ryan McMahon, Randall Grichuk, J.P. Ascara, Caballero. I'm not going to knock because he's gotten a couple big hits the last couple days, or at least on Saturday night, and I'll get to Saturday night. I mean, they just have no punch for a team that just continues to run it back and passed over the years on the Freddie Freemans and Bryce Harpers and Manny Machados, and Otani's never going to come here, and just every free agent that has gone elsewhere. It's really just kind of a decrepit lineup, the bottom half. Now, Judge is still great. We'll see if he turns it on, hits a home run late. It's too early to worry about Judge, although I will admit, at his age, at some point, he's not going to be Judge anymore, but we went through this 2 years ago, slumping all the way until almost Memorial Day, and then he just went nuclear and won the MVP and won it pretty easily. But that's 2 years later. He's 2 years older. I'm still not worried about Judge. Rice has emerged. Stan, you figure, get his homers, but there are a lot of outs in that lineup. There's a lot of weak spots. And there's a lot of flaws in that line. It's almost like a National League lineup, the old National League lineup, where you had the pitcher hit, the 8-hitter was a weak hitter, and you would get that 7-8-9 inning, and it was just like an easy 7-8 pitch inning for the pitcher. It was just the pitcher was an automatic out, 7-8 couldn't hit, and you just get in and out of innings so quickly. And from the National League lineup standpoint, you're just trying to clear your pitcher and start the lineup over for the next inning. Grisham obviously had a great year last year. The fact that he's not duplicating that so far, and he's hitting, what, .120? That's not surprising. They just didn't do anything to improve the team. They didn't do anything. And I have no problem paying Grisham because, hey, don't want to let the 34 homers and good defense and center walk out the door. But at the same time, if that's going to limit you from getting other bats, spending on other people, then probably wasn't the best idea. But Yankees, I think, will ultimately be okay. They still have pitching. They still have Judge. As long as they stay healthy, they'll be okay. But just obviously a disaster the last 5 days, which brings me to Jazz Chisholm. Try never to get personal and talk about a player's intelligence or name call. That's just, it feels unprofessional, but you have to tell the truth. For Jazz Chisholm to not know the rules of baseball on Saturday night and to be so open and just careless and comfortable, I think is the best word, comfortable admitting he doesn't know anything or doesn't know the rules of baseball. One of the more bizarre quotes you'll ever see. Bases loaded. Double play gets him out of the inning. And he says after the game, well, I don't know the rule. If I had tagged the runner after we threw to the base, I don't know if that still counts as a force. I mean, he clearly didn't know the rule. Boone tries to cover up for him the next day, says he knew the rule. He just misspoke. Anyone who hears him, anyone who heard that quote, and it's just a damning quote, that he didn't know the rule. I mean, unless he's just playing a prank on everyone and just trying to be funny, which I think there's like a less than 5% chance that that's the real truth of the matter. I think he didn't know the rule, which is one of the more damning things you could say about a player to not know. Look, not every player is going to know every rule. And it's amazing sometimes in football when you get an overtime game or something. A lot of the players don't know, that, you know, can the game end in a tie? And the overtime rules have changed a lot over the years. So that's one thing. A second baseman to not know, you know, bases loaded, one out, I have to tag the runner, then throw to first, because if I throw to first and then we tag the runner after the run scores, then the run count. To not know that. If you don't know that, what else don't you know? I mean, and people want to blame Boone. And look, I'm more than happy to blame Boone on anything. That's not Boone's fault. It's not Boone's job to teach these players the rules of the game. I mean, you run to first, then you run to second, then you run to third, then you run home. You can't teach them everything. At this level of baseball, to not know that is just so bizarre. Now, he's not hitting, and you can't just trade these guys at a whim, but I would probably, if I had my wishes, I would wait for him to get hot, and he'll get hot. He's a talented player. Can run. He's got power. He's not as good as he thinks he is, but he's a talented player. I'd wait for him to get hot and just try to flip him for something. Maybe play Rosario at second. I know it's a short lineup to begin with, and you're taking a bat away from it, and it's probably not the best answer, the best solution, but boy, it's hard to win with that on your team. He loses every challenge with the ABS. He doesn't know the rules. It's just a reflection of the Yankees now, and it goes back to what I was saying about not spending money. I mean, George Steinbrenner, can you imagine a team? And for people older enough, they'll be able to imagine what it would be like for a player on the Yankees to do what Chisholm did and just so comfortably admit, hey, I don't know the rules. That would just not be tolerated when George Steinbrenner was running the team. But it's a different day and age. It's a new Yankee way, and that is not a good thing. The Mets also struggling. I would be a little bit more optimistic about the Mets just because they don't have Soto, and Lindor always starts pretty slow. But you know, the pitching outside of, I think, McClain and Peralta are pretty solid 1-2. Outside of that, Senga kind of up and down. You know, you see Peterson's been awful. But I think the Mets ultimately will probably be okay. But how about 10 straight losses for the Mets and the Yankees? And it's funny, I was on a text thread, the one with Gil and Bear, and I think Fez and Wishnev. And I agreed with it at the time. So, and Bear's unbelievable. Bear's great with these long shot bets. He was saying, I think it was the Yankees were up 2-0 on Wednesday night against the A's. And the A's, 2-7 at something, 2-7, 2-8 or something like that. And they were losing 2-0 to the Yankees. And Bear said, and I agreed with it at the time, hey, they might be a candidate for a worse record. I said, you know, that's probably a good bet. I don't think it was available. Otherwise, I would have bet it. And since then, they came back and won that game. They won the next day against the Yankees. And then they went 3 straight against the Mets. They won 5 in a row in New York. They're probably not happy about leaving New York. And all of a sudden, they're 8-7. Nobody else in that division has a better record than them. So all these caveats of it's early, which it obviously is, that's just a good turnaround, a remarkable turnaround, even though, you know, 2-7 to 8-7 doesn't sound like the worst deal in the world. But if you went from 2-7 to, like, you know, 3-13 or something, your season can just get off the rails before you know it. Like I always say, if you just fall behind 8 games under .500, let's say 8 games under .500, you got to have a good 18-10 month just to get back to even, and you really dig yourself a hole. So the A's have dug out. Kurtz finally hits his first homer. We know they've got a good offense. The pitching, we'll see. It's almost like Colorado, where it's just so hard to judge them because they play in such a unique ballpark with all that offense, where the numbers get skewed, the pitchers' numbers get skewed, and it's hard to evaluate. But you look at division odds right now, Yankees still odds on to win the AL East at minus 110, Blue Jays plus 450, Orioles have had a million injuries, 5-1, Red Sox plus 550. They have not played well, but they are obviously still well within striking distance here despite a bad start. And the Rays, who just, man, sweep the Yankees. They always do more with less. I don't think they're winning this division, but probably wouldn't have said the Blue Jays were winning this division this time last year. The Rays are 17-1. These are at DraftKings. Tigers are plus 140 to win the Central. Royals are plus 220. Guardians are 3-1. Twins plus 950. The White Sox are 35-1. Then in the AL West, Mariners plus 110. Rangers plus 230. Astros 4-1. A's 12-1. Angels 30-1. I've heard worse bets than the A's at 12-1 to win the division. I've heard worse bets. I don't think they're going to do it. I'm not even saying I would bet it. But if you have a boost or a free bet, 12-1, I don't think is the worst bet like I've ever heard. And they're at least fun to watch, fun to root for. You figure they'll hit a lot during the summer and be a fun team to keep an eye on. The Mariners, not off to a great start, even though, you know, the Mariners probably going to be okay here with their pitching. You figure the Mariners will be okay. Mariners are still the short shot there. Mets plus 145. Braves, who played pretty well here despite all the injuries before the season, plus 195. Phillies plus 220. Marlins 22-1. That number continues to come crashing down, even though Detroit did a number on them this weekend. Nationals 130-1 is missing a zero. NL Central, Brewers plus 180, Cubs plus 240, the Pirates down to plus 320. That was a very trendy, popular pick. They have played very well here since the bad start against the Mets. So that's pretty much, that's wide open. The Cubs had pitching issues. The Brewers, I think, was a little smoke and mirrors last year. Would not be shocked if the Pirates are plus 320. Now, do you want to bet plus 320 when you could add, you know, 10, 12, 14 to 1, whatever it was before the season? Probably not. But I don't think that's the craziest bet I've ever heard either. Reds plus 475. They have the talent in terms of the pitching, but Green and Lodolo are always hurt, and they just don't have a lot of offense. Cardinals on off to a bad start, 30 to 1. They're probably not winning the division, though. I would say more than likely. Probably is not even a strong enough word. They're not going to win that division. In the NL West, the Dodgers have officially clinched the division. You can give them the division. They're minus 1,400. Padres, 12 to 1. Not even going to read the odds for the rest of the team. So we'll see. No bets to add. I mentioned Rice a week or so ago at 100 to 1, 150 to 1, whatever price that was. He's been hitting the ball well. I think he got robbed of a homer by that dopey, dumpy Tropicana Field, the dome, whatever they call it, the Trop, on Sunday. That ball could have been a home run, but he has hit the ball well. OPS is there. The walks are there. 2-for-4 with a double again on Sunday. So the Ben Rice hype train will continue here on this podcast. I don't think he's going to win the award, but I wouldn't be shocked if he gives you a run for your money. He is still 65 to 1 at DraftKings. I don't mind that bet. Judge plus 180. Witt, 5 to 1. He's been off to a pretty slow start. And then Gunnar Henderson, Alvarez are the only guys that are single digits. Julio Rodriguez and Ramirez, 16 to 1 each. So that's the baseball. We'll get to Gil. I don't know if I mentioned this, but the bets I would recommend here, the play-ins are up already. 231.5 Miami and the Hornets. I think by the time you probably listen to this, that will move down a few points. Orlando and Philly is 220.5. I would just bet all four play-in games under. We go through this every year. It's almost like game sevens or championship games in the NCAA tournament. These games are single elimination. They always get bet to the under. So I would imagine those all come crashing down, but tick down a good 3 or 4 points. Not that you want to middle an NBA total because there's so many points, and the more points there are, the less likely it is for middle. But I think if you just bet the four openers, the four playing game openers, I think those will all come down a reasonable amount. 231.5 for Heat Hornets. Hornets are minus 5.5. And then, like I said, Orlando is at Philly. Philly was a 1.5-point dog just a few minutes ago, but now Philly is laying 1.5, which I can understand. I don't trust that Orlando team at all, and the total is 220.5. I would imagine those come down a little bit. So we'll spend a little time. Well, I guess the Tuesday ones will happen before our next pod, but we'll spend some time on the play-in games on Wednesday. The play-in games aren't the end of the world. It's the playoffs that matter, and we should have a pretty good postseason. Hawks-Knicks, that game one series spread is open. That game one spread is open. Knicks laying 5.5. Cavs are laying 7.5 here to Toronto. Series prices are Knicks are up to minus 290. Cavs are minus 650 against the Raptors. Cavs should probably take care of that series in 4 or 5 games. I'd be surprised if that went 6 or longer. But we'll see what Gil Alexander thinks. We'll talk some Masters, some NBA, some MLB. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. He joins us once again. You catch him at Numbers Game, Beating the Book, the Megapod. He's everywhere, and he joins us now. It is Gil Alexander. Gilly, Rory McIlroy, back to back. Did you enjoy the Masters? And I guess I'll start with this. You know, it was a roller coaster. He goes into Saturday. Looks like maybe it's a runaway. He's going to win. Then he's not. Then eventually he is. My takeaway, and I said it before the tournament, man, it's hard to pick a winner in golf because if golf is not your specialty, you kind of aggregate and listen to people's different opinions. And you think, this guy likes 4 or 5 guys. That person likes 4 or 5 guys. And it's just picking the right one. And not that many seem to pick Rory. But did you enjoy the tournament? What was your takeaways, betting or otherwise?
I love the tournament. First of all, thanks for having me. Very, very honored to be on the Should Have Bet More podcast for, I believe, my record 17th appearance, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I didn't count. I love the Masters. I'll borrow one of your lines. Imagine not loving the Masters, right? Like, it's just, it's so great. I do nothing, yesterday or today, did nothing but sit on my behind watching this. I did not win in the end because I had Scheffler. I did not have any Rory. Did I enjoy it? Yeah. I was watching it through my bet, obviously, on Scheffler. And in the end, it was still an enjoyable tournament, even though I lost money on it. But yeah, like last year I won on Rory when he fell behind and then I made the smart bet of getting him. That's the only like golf tournament that I remember really scoring on big time. I know we have guys at VEASAN who hit outrights all the time. But I'm not one, you know, I'm betting one guy or two guys max when I'm doing it. And so it's, yeah, doing it that way, it's very difficult.
Yeah, and I'm like you. I'll bet one guy once in a while because I want to, if you're going to do this, and I know people who do pretty well with this, or at least they think they do, they divide it up, you know, a tenth of a unit here, a fifth of a unit here, and they create a little bucket where if they lose two units on this tournament, it's not the end of the world. Eventually, they're going to come out in the end. At least that's the hope. When I want to win, when I win, I want to feel it. So I pick one guy once in a while, and it's just, man, it's called a needle in a haystack for a reason.
This was, I mean, I do think that a little bit of this today was going to get lost, though. Like, I, you know, watching the broadcast, and, you know, they do a great job, obviously. Nance with a call at the end, by the way. Rory is a rare repeat winner at Augusta. He really dug deep for that one. But I think that they didn't really emphasize down the stretch just how bad this looked for Rory at one point today. Like, I don't think they really emphasize that enough. Rory, it feels like it was like 10 days ago now. But earlier today, when Rory bogeyed, remember he was on the sixth hole, he had a putt off the green that barely got on the green, and he fell three back at that point. Oh, I'm not even going back to the early part. Yeah, he fell three back at that point to 9 under. He was three behind Cameron Young at that point. Then Young bogeyed a short putt, so he's two back. Young then bogeyed the next one, so Rory was... then Rose started to get taken. There was one point like Rose had a two-stroke lead over Rory. But then Rory birdied 8. He gacked a chip shot putt at 9, so he remained one back. And then Rose bogeyed, and so then Rory finally got to the top of the leaderboard. And when Rose chunked a chip at 12 and bogeyed, he was one back of Rory. When Rory birdied 12, he was two ahead of Rose, Young, Hatton, and Henley at that point. Rory never was ahead by less than 2 strokes till the very end when he beat Scotty by 1 at the end. But there was a point earlier in this round when Rory, after the 6th hole, Rory was down 3 to Young, and then later he was down 2 to Justin Rose. And I feel like... I barely remember that happening. Also earlier, I missed this part. On the 4th, remember the real collapse for Rory before that was he missed a par putt left to drop to 11 under. And then he had a chip shot comeback putt and he missed that to have a double bogey. That's when he fell behind Young. So like it feels like it was 5 days ago, but it was just on the front nine when all this was going on and then bled into the back nine. And then he just took over after that and really never... I mean, obviously he bogeyed 18, but he never really choked despite really bad, you know, drives on a couple of those later holes.
Did you bet anything live? Did you get tempted to bet anything live?
No.
If Scheffler had one, would you have had the FOMO of, man, I could have jumped back in at some astronomical numbers? Nothing in terms of the live interest for you?
No, I bet Scheffler low round all 4 days, dead heated day 3. I figured that was the best way to play Scheffler in addition to the outright preflop. So I did get the dead heat on day 3. And I got the best, debutante, right, with Goddard up. There was some stuff I won, but it's still a losing tournament for me in the wash.
Let's do baseball, and I want to do some NBA. You've asked people, and it's a good question. I think, you know, all of us doing these shows, hey, has anything changed your mind in the last in the first couple weeks? And usually the smart answer is no, but I don't know. I'll tee you up. I'll kind of lead the witness. The Yankees have lost 5 in a row. The Mets have lost 5 in a row. Is either team in trouble? Do you think one is more serious than the others? And any other big takeaways here from the first couple weeks?
Well, as you have pointed out in our group exchange, it would be great if Jazz Chisholm knew the rules of baseball. That was kind of revealing on Saturday. As a Yankee fan, were you just flabbergasted by that?
I'm just, as a sports fan, it's tough. I was saying this in my open. You know, you know this. When you do this job, you never want to... You don't want to name call. You don't want to question the intelligence of an athlete. It's just too personal. It feels unprofessional. But we have to be honest. I mean, when you say something like that, if you don't know that, what else don't you know? That's just baffling. Doesn't even begin to describe it. That was baffling.
Well, it was a little confusing because obviously what he was trying to do is he was trying to tag the runner, then throw to first, right? That would have ended the inning had that happened, correct? Would that have ended the inning at that point? Yeah. So he misses the tag. And at that point, the play, I mean, it's kind of, they're kind of done at that point anyway, right? But then he made the mistake of saying after the game, he was like, well, if I'd gone at first and they'd gone a second after that, we still would have, like, it would have somehow negated the run. I guess that's what he was trying to say. He wasn't sure about that.
He was pretty clear, and I'm watching the clip. It's not, man, the way he says it, he's just so casual about it. He was asking the reporter, and Grisham chimes in. He goes, what's the rule with that? I don't know the rule. He flat out said, I don't know the rule. If I throw to first and then we get the guy, is that still okay? Is that still an RBI? Hard to believe.
Yeah, hard to believe. To answer your question, though, I'm more I don't know if I. Here's the thing with the Yankees. Here's why the answer is not the Yankees. Let's put it that way. The answer is not the Yankees because they're 0-4 in one run games this year.
Yeah.
Oh no, check that. After today, did they lose by one run today? 0-5 now. They're 0-5 in one run games. I know that Yankee fans tend to crush their bullpen in a way that non-Yankee fans actually don't. I don't think that that's like something that's going to continue. So I feel like they are, by the way, that's the worst one-run record in all of baseball. You know, contrast that with teams like, and I haven't gone over the scores today, but, you know, teams like the Reds are 4-0 in one-run games. The Cardinals going into today were undefeated 3-0 in one-run games. Pirates, you know, undefeated in one-run games. So, I mean, that just determines so many things. And I don't think the Yankees' bullpen is that big of a problem. You, as someone who has perhaps watched more Yankee baseball this year than I have, might have a different opinion. But that's my sense, that the Yankees will be fine.
My issue with them, just too many holes in the lineup. McMahon's an automatic out, good glove, no bat. I mean, they're playing J.P. Ascara. There's just, you go to that, past the sixth spot of the lineup. Grisham had a great year last year, but that looks more like lightning in a bottle. To me, there's just too many outs. When Judge, it's the same thing it's been outside of the Soto year. It's the same thing it's been a lot of these years with Judge. If Judge isn't carrying the load, if he's not doing the heavy lifting, there's not a lot of people that pick up the slack.
This has shades of the Kiner Falefa years, is what you're saying? There's nothing worse. Is there anything worse in sports betting than backing a team, having a bet on a team with a offense that is just so average at best? The Reds, which is my March April team, is just that, right? It's like the pitching up until today or this last series with the Angels was fine, but like the runs are so hard to come by, and you're just like, oh god.
Like just bad quarterback in football is pretty rough too. I've had some of those as a Vikings fan. Bad quarterback can be frustrating, where you just feel like every first down is just like pulling a tooth out, and it's just three and out, and it's punting, and it's just that's not a fun watch either.
Bad quarterback in football, though, I kind of feel like you only have yourself to blame for making that bet, though, because you know what you're getting into, unless there's an injury, right? With baseball, you can sort of trick yourself into thinking, well, there's a randomness to baseball. Sure. This lineup just has to gel, you know, for a few innings together. It was sequencing at one point. And so, yeah, that is it's definitely, you know, tough with the Yankees. The only issue I would say with the positive side with the Yankees is, who else in that division is playing good enough right now where you're like, oh, well, they'll take over. And I'm not sure there is a team.
I was high on Baltimore, but man, every time you look up, Baltimore's got another injury. Adley Rutschman goes to the IL. Holiday's already on there. Jordan Westbrook. I mean, they've got a good like 8 or 10 guys that they expected to contribute all in the aisle. Some of them were hurt before the year, but the injuries really piling up. Alonso hasn't hit yet, but your point is well taken. And that kind of speaks to the whole sport, where you just look at, and you know, sometimes you get caught up so much in just the matchups, the data, and the minutia, where you just forget to look at like the broad standings. Maybe you don't, because you have these records where it's like, all right, coming into Sunday, the Dodgers were 11-3. And they were at the top of the sport, which isn't a surprise. And then everyone else, it feels like, all right, 9-6, 7-7, 8-7, where the old saying about the NFL was meant to be an 8-8 league and there's a lot of parity. That's kind of how it felt with baseball. I think the worst record in the AL was only 5-9, which is obviously not good, but not awful. So it feels like the whole sport is, and it's early. We're going to get separation, but it feels like early on it's a lot of parity so far.
Well, that is the headline. What you just said is the headline. Like, okay, so we're still partial on Sunday when we're recording this. The Dodgers, as you said, the Dodgers are 11-4, and the Padres are 10-6. Nobody else has more than 9 wins, and nobody else, I don't know what the White Sox did today, if they're still playing. But nobody else has fewer than 5 wins, and they're the only one. Everybody else has 6 wins or more. So it is, that's really the headline of the first 10th of the season, right? We're about roughly 10% now of the way through an MLB season. It's complete parity with the exception of a team like the Dodgers. And then, I mean, the Braves could also argue our run differential means we should be better. Braves might win. You know, Braves and Guardians are playing today for, and the winner of that will have 10 wins also. So they're the only other team that has performed, at least run differential-wise, that has been as good as the Dodgers. But yeah, it's parity. It's parity, and it's baseball, and that's why the Mets, getting back to your original question, I think the Mets have a lot more to worry about in that division than the Yankees do in theirs. Like, the Red Sox, who a lot of people liked before the season started, Joe Pete did not like them. I kind of agreed with him. I don't think they're that great. Toronto's got all the injuries in the world. You just mentioned Baltimore. Tampa Bay never really scares me. Whereas the Mets, while I don't think this is the best version of the Phillies, the Marlins are way better, and I think the Braves are a lot better than people think they are. So I think it's worse off for the Mets, to be honest with you.
A market that we talked about kind of got more attention this offseason than in the past, but with these teams not really separating themselves at the bottom, do you have anyone in mind? If I said, hey, what do you have any bet for worst record? Like, who's the worst team right now? Is it still going to be Colorado kind of by default? Do you have anyone where you watch, you know, every day and you're like, man, that team might be really, really bad?
I hate to say the Giants because.
Oh, wow.
I love the Giants, and I do think there's a world where the Giants gel, right? That offense shouldn't be this bad, right? It should, like, Jung-Hoo Lee, Luis Arias, Willy Adames, Rafael Devers, Matt Chapp, like, it's a good, like, those are good players, right? So there's a world where those guys get together and they're all playing well at one time, so they shouldn't be this bad. I still think it's the Rockies. Rockies. But it may not be as big of a gap as we thought. Let's put it that way.
I want to have some fun with our buddy the Bear, because when he texted this the other day, I don't know if you remember the text. We sent a lot of texts, you know, throughout the day. Me, you, Steve Fezzik, the Bear, Chris Felica, Todd Wisniew, one of the great group chats that there is. He sent this text. I don't know if you remember this. I think the A's were 2-7, and they were down 2-0 to the Yankees. And I think the Bear goes, A's might be a sneaky bet for worse record. And at the time, I'm thinking, you know what? The pitching's not clicking. They're not going to hit. They might have worse record. They come back and win that game. They win the next game against the Yankees, and then they sweep the Mets. And now I think they're 8-7. So it's just funny, the timing of it. But at the time he said it, who knows? They might still be bad. We're still very early, but it's just funny how the timing of that worked.
I'm actually glad that you brought them up. They're tied for first place after 15 games. They have only played 3 home games. Nick Kurtz hit his first homer today.
Amazing.
I think that they are, from a day-to-day betting standpoint, that might be the team to get on quick before lines adjust. Because that team actually is, based on everything I just said, they should be as positive as any team is right now after 15 games.
Are you buying the Ben Rice, Barry Bonds comparisons? A lot of people have started to make them. Do you think that's outlandish?
You're like Trump. Oh, a lot of people are saying. you know, I'm gonna just say no to that. Just clarification.
Bucking the trend. Contrarian opinion. Okay.
Ben Rice, I told you the thing that your love of Ben Rice reminds me of is me and Jason Weingarten's love of Corey Seager, where it's like, oh, the barrels. The barrels, man. Look at his baseball savant page. He's definitely been awesome, and you got him at a great number. I'm not going to deny that. God, Yankees have lost 5 in a row now.
Jeez. 6 out of 7.
That's not good, I'm told. No, I don't. You know, I did make the Mason Miller bet. Speaking of awards bets, I know you have Ben Rice for MVP. I did finally make Mason Miller. I couldn't resist the Mason Miller NL Cy Young thing any longer. And I have never been one of these guys who backs. I know year after year, there's always some reliever and everybody's like, hey, I don't know. This guy is a reliever. I know. Right. And because Gagne, nobody's won a reliever. No reliever has won a Cy Young since Gagne did it.
It's like the NFL running back MVP thing.
That's right. But the Mason Miller stats are so insane that it's like, okay, let me just grab a 40 to 1 before it gets any lower. They only let me have a nickel on it at Resorts World, by the way, so then they moved it. But they that's the one awards bet I made in baseball where I'm just like, okay, let me just get this in the account and not have to hate myself if it continues.
These books love to cost themselves money and save us money on bets that are probably going to lose by winning. It's just it's the incredible. Irony of it is incredible.
Amazing.
NBA, before we get to some playoff stuff, and the last couple of years we were done by now. We're recording this like 7:30 Eastern. It was all the games were during the day. It would go against the Masters. That's probably what they didn't want to do. But from a content standpoint, it was good because I know all the matchups, the playoff odds, the series prices, and I can get it out. I'm not going to stay up till midnight here for Portland and Sacramento to finish up, so I know the matchups. I'll live with it. We'll do it another day. I'll start with this, more of a generic sports talk question. Does the NBA ever get this back? Their regular season is broken. It's a mess.
No.
Can they ever fix it?
No.
It's gone forever.
It's gone forever. That's the short answer, because we've talked about it so many different ways, and everybody's got a fucking suggestion, right, of how you stop tanking. I just don't think you fundamentally can. Without making it so complicated that it just turns off, fans to that too. And I just think that this is always going to be the nature of the beast. Did you see that? Tanking is over now because the regular season is going to be over, but did you catch the Grizzlies-Utah game on Friday?
I did. Well, I didn't watch it. Why would I watch that? No. I saw some of the fallout, the guys that got triple doubles. I saw somebody tweeting about it, and people could have tweeted anything about it and made it up because nobody actually watched the game. So you could have just said, some player we never heard of scored 75 points. Nobody, it's like a tree falling in the forest. But somebody tweeted, the Grizzlies called a timeout with 3 minutes to go in the second quarter, or made a substitution with 3 minutes to go. 3 minutes into the second quarter, the Grizzlies made a substitution down 15 or something and didn't make another substitution until they were down 50 in the second half.
That's awesome. I didn't even know that. That detail I didn't even know. 3 minutes left of the second quarter until they were down 50.
Into the second quarter. So the 9 minute mark. So 3 minutes into the second quarter, I got my five guys out there. We're down 15 or so. I'm going to leave those five guys out there until we're down 50. Then I'll put somebody else in. I mean, this is not a sport. This is just not a sport anymore in the regular season.
No, it's ridiculous. The only reason I bring that up is because when they do the documentary on tanking, that game will always be known as the bottom of it all. It was just, you had five guys starting for the Grizzlies that nobody has ever heard of, like four 10-day contract guys, and one guy who was a two-way player. And there was one guy on the Grizzlies who, one of the 10-day contract guys, who like had 16 points in 15 minutes of play, and this might be the substitution that you're talking about. They quickly yanked him off. They're like, dude, you don't get the assignment. And he never returned to the game until they were down 50. So maybe that's the guy we were talking about. But they only played six guys total. So maybe that was it. And it set NBA records. I don't know if people know this. Like in the annals of NBA history, whenever it says, oh, was there ever an NBA game with three triple doubles, this was the game. So wow. It's like it has made a mockery of the record books now, also on top of it. Two dudes on the Jazz bench had triple doubles and that guy. Oh no, and another guy on the Grizzlies. So it's just it'll never come back. The best suggestion I've heard, and this is going to be the worst suggestion, but it's also the best, is just go back to how it was in the early 80s when they were tanking for Olajuwon and Sampson. And in that case, it was only two teams going for broke. And somehow that worked out that way then. Although now that I say that, I'm thinking, well, 2018, it was six, seven teams going for DeAndre Ayton. So maybe that's not going to work either. But that's as good as anything. I really believe it.
Yeah, and boy, I just don't know what the sport looks like 5, 10, 15, 20. If they never get it back, and forever is a long time, and who knows, maybe a new commissioner, new set of rules. I just, man, this is it's tough. When your regular season, when you just become a playoff sport, and people will say, wow, you hate the NBA. And people that are defensive of the NBA will say, well, you just don't like the NBA. You hate it. You and I, I've loved the NBA since I was a kid. You've loved the NBA forever. This is just not the NBA we grew up with.
No, it's not. But fast forward a month and a half from now when we're in the conference semifinals, we're going to be like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, so. I hope it doesn't take 6 weeks to get to the through one round, but dude. it does take pretty long. Speaking of which, first round matchup you want to bet on, first round matchup you want to watch. We don't know all the matchups, but what are just some general like first round? I can't wait to watch this one. Or can't wait to bet on this one. Whatever direction you like.
I think it's what everybody would say in the East, which is wherever if. By the way, it's still an if, right? But if Philadelphia / Charlotte get into the NBA, get into the Eastern Conference playoffs, because they're both play-ins, at least as of this moment, right? Charlotte is definitely a play-in, but Philadelphia will see by the end of the day, wherever they end up, whoever ends up playing Detroit, that ends up being a really interesting series, I think. So that's clearly in the East. In the West, to be honest with you, first round, I guess it's the Lakers and Rockets, just because I don't think, I guess Lakers going to be four, and unless the Spurs beat the Spurs beat the Nuggets today, right, and the Lakers win, that might change things, I think.
That Lakers are probably going to be the three. If the Spurs take care of business and the Spurs are like 11-point favorite, that would set up Spurs T-Wolves.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, no, that would set up Lakers T-Wolves. Yeah. Nuggets Rockets.
Lakers T-Wolves would be the interesting one. Because for as much as, and for me, the only reason it's interesting for me is because I cannot stand how much the mainstream media talks about the Lakers. And so I would just want to see the Timberwolves crush them, even though Ant is an issue, right? But that would be the one. I've asked this question of Drew Dinsick, who runs numbers for all these series. And the way I phrase it is, which of these series can you not wait for the line to appear that you can exploit? And his response was pretty interesting in the West, because it was, he didn't like the wording of the question. What he said was, well, it'll come up as exploiting, but basically, will I have the onions to play it? Because he thinks that his numbers will have the Suns as a play on against the Spurs. And even he admitted, he's like, and they match up terribly against them. So that would take a lot of cojones to do that. And his other one was the Timberwolves at the time playing the Nuggets. But now if it's the Lakers, I'm sure he'd even think, who knows what that series price will be. That'll be interesting.
Oh, I think it's -9, -1,000. I think the Lakers are getting swept. I don't think they can win. I don't think they'll win. I mean, anyone can always win a game. Picking a sweep is dangerous because the team just lets their guard down. But, man, how do the Lakers win a game? With no Luka, with no Reeves, I don't see how they win a game.
Well, has Luka been ruled out for anything in the first round?
That hamstring injury is usually a pretty lengthy one. I guess the hope is you steal one early, you get to like a game six, and then maybe he can limp back. But this team's not winning a championship. I know it's the playoffs. You don't want to say, well, just play him for next year and all that stuff. But I mean, you're going to really just risk further injury to what? To maybe push it to a second round? I mean, it's not going to happen. It's a shame too. It's a shame because Luka was playing well. And again, not that they were winning a championship or getting to a finals, but Lakers and Luka and LeBron versus Wemby in round two. I mean, the league would have loved that. Six or seven. I mean, that's a hell of a series. That's a hell of a draw. And now you basically just have a dead team. To me, the Lakers are basically a bye.
Yeah, you're right. The reports are optimistic on Luka, and I went to see what optimistic meant, and they're like beginning of the second round. So that's not optimistic. So yeah, I'll stick with the Eastern Conference answers, which is wherever and if, right? Because it's an if. Because they could be in play-ins. The Hornets are definitely in a play-in. We'll see about the Sixers. Wherever those two teams end up, because there is some reason to believe that the East at the top, right, despite Cade Cunningham coming back, which I think was a great move by Detroit to bring him, for him to come back early to get some ramp-up time, it'll be interesting to see Detroit versus whoever ends up in the 8th seed. If that's Charlotte or Philly, that'll be a cool series.
Who's in the finals? Who wins the finals?
I got Spurs and Celtics at 125-1, man. That's the finals. That's the finals. And the Spurs win it. Spurs win it all.
That would be
nice. And I have them at 19-1 to win it all. I just think the reason that I made those bets is because when they were playing the Thunder on the actual basketball court, none of this theory of people thinking that the Thunder are this awesome team, but when they're on the court against each other, you feel way more confident in the Spurs every possession than you do OKC. And why people tend to look away from that after OKC losing to them 4 out of 5 times this year, I don't really know. And the Celtics, to me, you know, full strength now, still the best team in the East. Because that's the thing with the Eastern Conference teams. The Knicks will do the same thing the Knicks do every year. The Cavs will do the same thing they do every year, which is tantalize their fan base. Like, oh, this is our year. And it never is. And I don't think there's any reason to believe this is the year either for either of those two teams.
Yeah, my only concern with the Spurs, and I bet on the night they got the second pick because I thought they were going to trade for Giannis. It's funny how those things work out at, what, 40 or 45 to 1. It just, man, it's, I don't say rare, almost unprecedented, probably unprecedented to win it your first at bat. To be like, hey, we've never been to the playoffs. We're young. We've never been here, and we're going to go win it. That being said, as someone who bet OKC to break the record, that really started to come apart against the Spurs, and I watched those games. Yep. I remember a Saturday night game right around bowl season, so a couple weeks before Christmas, where I was like, oh, this is a problem. I mean, this is the Spurs just have length and bodies, and Wembanyama's the best player on the court, so I mean, I completely understand it.
How about OKC? Obviously, dependent on result today, but you would imagine OKC's got no reason to play anybody today, I would imagine, although they're 7.5-point favorites, so let's say they win. 2.5 games. They beat their season win total in the end by 2.5 games if they win today. That's it. That's amazing. Yeah,
it is. It is. And that one got home and documented 3-1 for me over unders on a numbers game. So I picked out a few that was good.
Nice.
Kings under, Pacers under, OKC over, and then Suns under was the only loser. But yeah, you know, I think OKC just got, once they realized they weren't going to break the record, I just think there was a little boredom that set in. But look, if that's the series, and I think we'll get it, I hope we get it, OKC versus San Antonio should be an absolute classic.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for that. That'll be, May 20th by then or something like that?
Yeah, a good 3 or 4 months from now, we'll get there. Absolutely. But it's a good time of the year. It gets warmer here on the East Coast. NBA playoffs, yep. NHL playoffs, the draft, which has had about as a little amount of buzz for any draft I can ever remember. That's coming, believe it or not. It's
10 days, man. Start 11 days from now. No buzz at all.
None. Not a lot of quarterbacks. We know Mendoza's going one. I'm not sure the reason, but there really hasn't been much buzz. But Gilly, appreciate the time, man. A numbers game, beating the book. Where else can we find you?
That's it, really. Numbers game and beating the book. You that's enough. You don't need more of me.
Appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Thank you, brother.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back on Wednesday. Thanks to Gil Alexander. Thank you guys for listening. See you then.